And now this is side two of broadcast number 658, and it's Mae Brussel on KAZU FM in Pacific Grove, California. So November 22nd, 23rd, and 24th, when the church is linked to the collapse of the Banco Ambrosiano for all of this money, they're sitting together, and the Wall Street Journal then is running this huge article, as I say, November 23rd, in connection with Paul Marcinkus, the very fellow who's going to talk about golf at this time, and tennis, and the Pope and Roberta Calvi's death. November the 25th, there was more trouble for the Vatican, still more trouble. That's the day that $635 million in heroin was located in the Banco Ambrosiano building, and Mr. Henry R. Sands' name surfaced, and the links to Licio Gelli, the international fascist, the gun running, the narcotics, our Bell helicopter, and then our Sand turned out later, and I've done broadcast work for our Drug Enforcement Agency for 20 years with the American Drug Agencies, which is tantamount and identical to the CIA. So just while William French Smith is enjoying the company of renewing a friendship or meeting his old buddy, that story was breaking. And then 2 days later, November 27th, the Pope pledges that he will help solve the bank problem. Now he has the weapons and drugs to the bank problems and the missing money and the murder. Calvi's secretary went flying out of the window just 2 days before Roberta Calvi died. And then for money and support and for what he needed to go keep going, he promoted the Opus Dei, the Pope did November 29th, which are the lay people of the Catholic group that were formed in 1928. They set up Franco and Mussolini and Hitler with funds, with the approval of the Vatican Church, but they have a lot of money. These are the business people who had to be recognized by the Pope to bail him out. So these were the little quiet things that were going on in November of 1982, and our Attorney General is there, and our ambassador is assigned there to be the liaison between the American intelligence, the Vatican, and know what's going on, and he can come back to this country and give messages and be a bagman. I felt all along this was not the time to have an ambassador to the Vatican after so many years, and certainly not Ronald Reagan's friend, and certainly not Paul Marcinkus' best friend, and this international triangle of the Justice Department, the Italian crook and murderer, and Marcinkus' name is also in the book, and God's name is being behind the murder of the Pope, John Paul I. So John Paul II keeps Marcinkus there, doesn't fire him, doesn't move him, but works with William French Smith, our Attorney General, and also with Paul Marcinkus, who can come over and visit them. Shortly after that, Marcinkus kind of went in hiding and doesn't leave the Vatican very much. Well, as I say, Wilson claims that the contacts were before he was appointed, but 2 months after he was made the ambassador, in May of 84, he persisted in his efforts to use the Justice Department to determine the status of any interest in Paul Marcinkus. He started it before he was the ambassador, and he kept it up afterwards. And when William Wilson was asked about it, he had a loss of memory. He didn't remember sending any letter to William French Smith in 1982. He can't remember writing the letter. He can't recall talking to Kenneth Starr or getting a letter saying it's not appropriate. Now, to cover up the story, they said that they told Smith to have a long shave that morning so he wouldn't spend too much time with Marcinkus, which is absolutely ridiculous. You don't have to look at all the disclaimers in the article. Just look who's sitting in the same room, and that's the way to read your stories if you want to know it. I don't get confused by what I read because I take the names and dates that they met and who they met with, and my imagination will tell me what they talked about. Your New York Times and Wall Street Journal isn't going to tell you what they're talking about. So at the time that they are breakfasting, Smith is on the drug tour. Banco Ambrosiano has collapsed. Calvi is linked to the drugs. Calvi's just murdered. Licio Gelli's fled. He's fled in 1981, but he still has his roots with these various people. He goes back to Switzerland to get some money and is arrested and walks out of the jail. So he's not an invisible party. Marcinkus was involved with the giant scandals and the dummy front and missing money, and it not only was not appropriate for Smith and Marcinkus and Wilson to meet, but after those scandals, they were still in cahoots and corresponding with each other, Wilson a member of the kitchen cabinet. I always felt that there was more to Ronald Reagan and Edwin Meese. I know there is. They're linked to the Vatican, and they may have a lot tied up with the Vatican funds. And I felt a long time ago, before I knew Edwin Meese was in financial trouble, that he was affected some way by these. I don't know what yet, but it'll be coming out more as the years go by. We'll see what it is. Now, he not only interfered with that scandal, but he interfered with Mark Rich. And the article tells how the U.S. envoy was chastised for being in touch with Mark Rich, that his involvement in the case, he got a warning from the State Department about his behavior, a cable from Lawrence Eagleburger. Now, that's an interesting character, who was Undersecretary of the State in December 83. And Rich, the commodities trader, he's renounced his citizenship. We've talked about him. He's indicted with the largest tax evasion in U.S. history. And Eagleburger cables him and says, "Our legal advisors and the Justice Department are all extremely nervous about any involvement of your part in this case. You can believe they're nervous, the Reagan administration." Now getting into the Mark Rich story, for lots of reasons, that Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan, their links to the Vatican through Michael Sindone and Licio Gelli, they can't stay away from this Vatican connection and the people that represent the Vatican no matter what they do. Now, William Wilson met with a man named Matthias Kraft, a Swiss official. He was warned by Eagleburger to stay out of it. Kraft was the deputy director for international law in Geneva. Wilson sidestepped the reason he went in with the meeting with Mark Rich. He wouldn't discuss the nature of it. When he was through, he reported back to Lawrence Eagleburger. So whatever Eagleburger said was just a cover, actually just a cover. And he went ahead and did what he wanted. He wasn't brought home or fired. There's nobody in the Reagan administration you can fire. If you fire Burford, you bring her back. They stick together. They build too many secrets together where the bodies are. And in this case, he went against what he was told, that so that means he really got the green light. And then he reports back to him, so that at that point they can say, get home. But no, he reports back to him. He used a special telephone in the Justice Department, a secure phone, to call Mr. Webster, but they asked him what he said, and he says, "Well, I'm not going to tell you what I said, or I wouldn't have had to use that phone." So he talked to this Swiss lawyer, and they told him they knew someone that Wilson ought to meet, and he took up the offer of an introduction to Mark Rich. The lawyer asked Wilson to intercede for his client, Mark Rich. Now, that is an interesting story because of the connections of these various people, and I'll chart it out for you one time on the air, and if you want, I drew a little diagram with the tapes that accompany these broadcasts if you want to send for it. Robert Keith Gray, my favorite character in Washington, D.C., that I believe is the heart of all these central connecting offices. His boss, when he worked for the CIA in Task Force 157, was Henry Kissinger. Okay, now, Robert Keith Gray has a close personal relationship to Henry Kissinger. He also had a relationship to George Bush and Task Force 157, the Nugenhan Bank, the heroin, the drugs, the murder, the assassination teams that tied in also with the people in Italy, Nugenhan 157. So Robert Keith Gray worked in these agencies under the State Department of Henry Kissinger and George Bush in the intelligence operation. Now, Gray was the man who was behind the appointment of William Wilson as the ambassador to Vatican. So by having him in there, he could listen to see for Henry Kissinger what is going on with Paul Marcinkus and Mark Rich, and has direct contacts to those people. Now, Lawrence Eagleburger in the State Department was warning Wilson about interfering with Rich, but Eagleburger quickly left the State Department and now works as the president of Henry Kissinger's public relations firm, identical to Robert Keith Gray's, but not quite as big yet. Eagleburger is the president of Kissinger Associates. Now, Henry Kissinger, I've mentioned many times, is on the board of Mark Rich's 20th Century Fox and Pebble Beach Corporation. So that Eagleburger's in the State Department. He's in touch with Wilson. Wilson knows what's going on, and Wilson knows because Eagleburger's partner, Kissinger, is on the board of Mark Rich's corporation, which he has not yet sold. So Robert Keith Gray has a finger into the Vatican connections on his board. Is Claire Booth Luce of the Vatican, strong Knight of Malta, close to Alexander Haig, another Knight of Malta. But Robert Keith Gray, again, is that middleman between Eagleburger and Kissinger. and Mark Rich, and he also is close to Wilson and Marcinkus and the Vatican. Wilson, a long friend of Marcinkus, and he pushes him to be the ambassador. So whatever goes on in Rome comes back through the ears of the ambassador to the Vatican, who has nothing to do with the Vatican or the United States except the vested interests of people like Mark Rich and the corporations that Kissinger represents, or the Vatican interest and the financial interest of keeping narcotics traffic and gun running going. Now, another story in the New York Times, July the 12th, by Leslie Maitland Werner. Rare ruling lets the U.S. envoy remain on the corporate boards. William Wilson was allowed to remain on the board of two corporations when he was made ambassador in January 1983, according to the State Department. No other ambassador in the United States to any country is on a board of a corporation, but they made this clear right from the beginning. He represents Pennzoil, and he's on the board of Earl M. Jorgensen in California, the Steel People, a member of the Kitchen Cabinet, along with Alfred Bloomingdale and the gang, the Reagan gang. Now, they said the purpose of the policy, the State Department, originally was to guard against conflict of interest. And they didn't see any reason why they couldn't make an exception because Wilson didn't seem to conflict with those rules. Well, just to cite a few examples, Mr. William Wilson is over there where oil problems concerning his friend Paul Marcinkus are appearing long before he's the ambassador. The Vatican Bank and Banco Ambrosiano were involved with Licio Gelli in the oil scandals in Italy. The money, millions of dollars that skipped the Italian till that went down to Argentina, to the Nazis in Argentina from Saudi Arabia. The money wasn't sent to Italy. It was sent to Argentina where Licio Gelli could take it and pass it around to the various Nazis there. Mark Rich was also involved in the oil scandal where millions of dollars from 20 to 40 million I mentioned last week or the week before was taken out of South Africa. Kuwait oil sent to South Africa illegally. We weren't supposed to send oil at all to South Africa, but he not only gives up his American citizenship, but he acts against the laws of the United States. It's more than money there, and it's a lot of power. So he's involved with not only Marcinkus and the oil scandals in Europe, but he's involved with the oil scandals, Mark Rich, and William Wilson is getting into that case and nosing around. And I'm sure William Wilson knew Mark Rich if he bought 50% of Fox Studio, because Marvin Davis, the oil man from Colorado, probably one of the wealthiest men in the United States in oil, has parties, is very sociable with his sidekick, Frank Sinatra, by him. He put Henry Kissinger and Gerry Ford on the board. There is oil all around these people. The ambassador to Vatican now is on the board of Pennzoil in Houston. Now, out of Pennzoil is George Bush, CIA director, who was the boss of Robert Keith Gray, who is the vice president of right now, his family are Zapata Oil. It's very quiet and put in trust, but when he's not vice president anymore, the oil is still drilling and being shipped to Zapata Oil. There's oil there. William Buckley and James Buckley are both knighted as members of the Knights of Malta, along with Claire Luce on the board of Robert Keith Gray and all the other characters, Alexander Haig and the whole team, Pantopec Oil. There is oil everywhere around the Vatican, around Mark Rich, around the Reagan administration and the power structure. So to have him be sent there to the Vatican and keep himself on the board of Pennzoil is to say that what he does has nothing to do with oil is ridiculous. If he was on the board of Germain Seed, that would be different. If he were on the board of some other corporation that makes roller skates, or, you know, that is independent of these people, that would be different. But, or some recreation thing like Disneyland, if he were on the board of that, but he's Pennzoil. And the other one is Mr. Jorgensen, and he's on the board of that, so he can come home and report to the kitchen cabinet and take letters in his diplomatic pouch and diplomatic bag and doesn't need the secure telephone. There were hearings before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee in January 84, and he passed the ethics rule because he told them right off the bat, and these hearings went so fast, that he's going to stay on the board even if he's the only ambassador in the United States that does it. And the person hearing the committee hearings was Senator Charles Percy, who was related by marriage to the Rockefellers. His daughter married into the Rockefeller family, and also Percy has always represented Standard Oil and Nelson and David Rockefeller's interest in the Congress. So while he's hearing this, and the Rockefeller hires under salary Henry Kissinger, who was on their board, and Henry Kissinger's wife, who's on the board of Chase Manhattan along with them, the Rockefeller Oil and Chase Bank. And, of course, Mr. Rich made a killing off of the inflated oil prices of Iran that involved those banks and people. So the person hearing him, the fox guarding the chicken house there, is Senator Charles Percy. So he went through those hearings, and Wilson is now in the United States if he hasn't gone back to Italy. And he can go to board meetings, and he can not report to Washington, which most ambassadors do, but he can visit and go to the board meetings and be the liaison, the traveling man. I always said Paul Marcinkus was not only the head of the Vatican Bank, but he was the Pope's bodyguard. And that way, when you had the most traveling Pope in the entire world, he could be the bag man collecting, leaving off to the fascist dictatorships, the spies, the unknowns that you're not going to wire the money to. He was the bag man for the intelligence, for the mafia, for the hidden banks in the Bahamas, the dummy fronts. So while he was supposed to be his bodyguard or security, and you saw how secure he was when the Pope was shot, he wasn't around, he was the traveling man until the scandals kept him locked up. So being as he's locked up there and could be tried for murder someday, or certainly for the collapsing of these banks, we have our ambassador to the Vatican writing letters saying he's just a jolly good fellow. Now, Leslie Maitland also had another interesting thing about this subject about our Ambassador Wilson that didn't make the wire services, or maybe you've seen it in other papers, but I haven't seen it. The article said another source familiar with Mr. Eagleburger's discussions with Mr. Wilson said that Eagleburger admonished Wilson after Wilson met with Libyan officials who were trying to develop him as a contact. Now, they wanted renewed interest in the United States for Libya. Well, again, Robert Keith Gray, who put Wilson over there in Rome that the Libyans are contacting, worked with Edwin Wilson, the other Wilson, Frank Turple. They armed Gaddafi. They armed Libya. The CIA worked sending them everything but the atomic bombs, and there's still talk about their sending atomic bombs. I'll do more on that later. But here are the Libyan contacts, and very useful. You see the Pope, you know, hugging Gaddafi. He won't recognize Israel, of course. And the Libyan connections of guiding Ajah and then blaming the KGB. Gaddafi can be useful in setting up terrorism. The terrorism that the garden plot may be bringing in could be Libyans who are mind-controlled and kamikaze, who are indeed meeting with a man like Mr. Wilson. They say they're trying to meet, but believe me, those aren't chance encounters. When they make the New York Times, there's more to them than just that first story. The Los Angeles Times has a story. The State Department is nervous about Marcinkus' Rich interference by Mr. Wilson. The State Department is nervous. Maybe if you write some letters to members of Congress and express your feelings about it. Ronald Reagan, according to the story, has confidence in William Wilson. Larry Speaks says he has no plans to meet with Mr. Wilson. He's in the United States now in Houston and then California. He's not scheduled to meet anybody. They usually meet when they come into this country, but he at least make a courtesy call, but he's not coming in. I don't think the question is whether the president is pleased with Burford or pleased with Wilson. It's a question of what do you want? What are they doing to interfere with the justice of these people who are criminals? And why should any American ambassador be over there while these entanglements are going on, these exposés, the banks being opened up and people going to jail for crimes that they committed linked to the Vatican? Why do we need somebody in that country except that we're involved in the drug smuggling and the weapon sales and the world international traffic of narcotics, and the murders are part of our intelligence death squads also. They are an extension of us, and that's why we need Mr. Wilson over there. There's a story in the San Francisco Chronicle this week. The Vatican Bank paid Ambrosiano debts. The Vatican Bank paid $249.9 million of their debt. Many of you saw the article. They weren't guilty or anything. You understand Paul Marcinkus had made deals with Verticalvi and gave letters of patronage that they were secure to put money in these places. And then the article says that they don't want to go to court in the cases, 109 foreign creditors. So the Vatican decided, rather than go to court, they'd pay off. That's identical to the Los Angeles Police Department paying almost $2 million to not have a suit by the American Civil Liberties Union and 131 plaintiffs. They're not guilty, they just don't want to go to court, so they make a quick settlement rather than have the evidence come out. Now, regarding the Vatican and Licio Gelli and the other scandals, there's a long story in the Washington Post, July 7th. Official report verifies the role of Italy's secret government. Now, that's the secret government of Licio Gelli that is directly linked to Alexander Haig, Henry Kissinger, Michael Ledeen. It's an extension of us. It's called the P2 Masonic Lodge. The story was full-blown in May of 81, just at the time the Pope was shot and 2 months before Ronald Reagan was shot. The two survived, but had they died, a lot of this I don't think would have come out. I think that they were lucky to survive, and they were in the middle of these investigations. The story that was confirmed in all the newspapers, maybe you saw it or didn't see it, that the names of the members of the P2 have been listed publicly for everyone to see, the scores of politicians, military officers, Secret Service, the civil servants. This is considered an authentic report, and it has been involved with major criminal undertakings, perhaps including the murder of the former Prime Minister Aldo Moro. Now, that has been in some Italian newspapers that have been translated by Ted Rubenstein. Jonathan Marshall translated them for Ted and David Emery. But this is the Washington Post linking the government of Italy and Licio Gelli and the intelligence people who were responsible for investigating Aldo Moro when he was kidnapped and murdered. The intelligence apparatus was behind that murder. Now, you may not like Lyndon LaRoche, and you may not like me to quote him, but for 2 years he's published articles week after week of the role of Henry Kissinger and the Masonic Lodge and the P2 in the murder of Aldo Moro. Now, this is terrorism, but you see, when it's not the Red Brigades, when it turns out to be a member who was at Ronald Reagan's inauguration, you don't hear George Shultz yelling terrorism any more than you hear about this kidnapping and almost murder of the gentleman from Nigeria. I want to go into it if I have time tonight. Otherwise, I'll do it later. The gross example of terrorism, two instances of the top Israeli intelligence and so forth, kidnapping Mr. Dico, Umero Dico, D-I-K-K-O, and putting him in that cart. We'll do some of that next week, because I really want to fill you on. That's as scandalous as this other story. So now we're not hearing about the terrible terrorists. We have Gaddafi making overtures to our ambassador to Rome. We have the P2 and the friends of our administration and the Vatican, the links of these people, the Italian government, the journalists, the police involved in the murder of Aldo Moro. They said Gelli was involved in arms smuggling. They had ties to neo-fascist, just call it fascist, Nazi groups in the early 70s. That's when Klaus Barbie surfaced and bloomed as soon as Richard Nixon was elected. In 1968, they could have business as usual. And this article goes in about the sinister group of people that ran the government behind the government. But the problem is that we have that identical group. We got a peek of it at the time of Watergate. You got a little view of it in the investigation of the assassination of John Kennedy. Studying that is the thing that turned me into this secret group and how they existed. But now the great peacemakers that want to fight terrorism, that abhor terrorism, where are they now? That's a good question. There was a meeting of George Shultz just a few weeks ago. It was written up in the L.A. Times, and he was with some prominent people, Jean Kirkpatrick, Defense Minister Moshe Ahrens, FBI Director William Webster, and Attorney General Designate Edwin Meese III, and they had a conference at the Jonathan Institute on terrorism. Can you imagine those four people who, Jean Kirkpatrick was pro-Argentine along with Licio Gelli and Lord Carrington. Can you imagine these people with these stories breaking out on terrorism? You don't see the lights flashing, the television, NBC, CBS, Today Show, you know, all that's going on. You don't see this. Very quietly, it's published in the newspapers. You can see it yourself. The Washington Post, July 7th, 1984, page A12. Aldo Moro, Licio Gelli, the secret government. And then we have our own Attorney General meeting with Paul Marcinkus and our ambassador to the Vatican. The Wall Street Journal has another story. Italian budget minister is ready to resign over his links to the P2 group. And the next day he did resign. Mr. Pietro Longo, L-O-N-G-O, resigned. He's a member of the P2 Lodge, and when the list was published officially, and Lissy O'Jelly wrote a letter saying it was authentic, he quickly got out. I didn't drop my keys. That was Paul. He's the key man, but that's okay. He's nice, so I'll let him do it. Another story in the San Jose Mercury. Vatican bank director convicted for fraud in Italian bank collapse. A senior Vatican bank official and 21 people were sentenced to 122 years in prison. The Milan court sentenced Luigi Menini, the managing director of the Institute for Religious Works of the Vatican Bank, to 7 years in jail for aggravated fraudulent bankruptcy of the Banca Privata. The Banca Privata was owned by Michael Sindona. It went bankrupt in 1974. It left a debt of $250 million. That's 10 years ago. That's a little bit of money. It would have been $100 million now. He also was responsible for that $45 million in New York City. It's not just Italian banks. It's the good old American banks. But a member of the Vatican and the layperson in charge of the Vatican Bank was just sentenced this week to 7 years in jail. And all of this didn't just come up. These are the sentencings. But this didn't just come up. This is the time period where our Attorney General is with Paul Marcinkus and the future ambassador to the Vatican, who then goes in and then meets with these people afterwards. There is a good description of the complexity of these people in the book, In Banks We Trust, by Penny Lerneau. There's lots of good books on the subject now. The Chapter 9, Razzle Dazzle Banking Reaches the Vatican as the Archbishop Marcinkus involves the Holy City in the schemes of the Italian fascists, the Sicilian Mafia, the Latin American death squads, an example of the high cost of credibility. Now, keep in mind that our Attorney General is meeting with this man, the Sicilian Mafia, the Italian fascists, the Latin American death squads, and they were set up by Henry Kissinger and Fritz Kramer and the Nazis after World War II. But in the book, In Banks We Trust, you get a little flavor of Italy during the time period where these men were together. And in 1984, it comes out that the guy is still messing around with their Marcinkus is messing around with the American Justice Department and our Attorney General, who has done nothing to stop organized crime, who's brought in more narcotics than any other time in American history, who is palsy with all of these people and continues the drug traffic, which has supported many of their friends and made them very prosperous. Most of the high-rise buildings are a monument to cocaine. The Executive Intelligence Review, September 21st, 1982, that was 3 months before the meeting of these officials having their little breakfast or golf or tennis or whatever, has a long story on the circles that created Henry Kissinger. I don't have time now. I just have 1 minute. But next week, I'm going to go into the forces, some of that, of the way Henry Kissinger worked with the P2, worked with the Masonic Lodge. In 1967, Lord Carrington, that's the partner of Henry Kissinger's offices, joined the board of Hambros Bank, which was then Michael Sindona's main partner in his Bank of Privata Financiers, the one that they just got prosecuted on, and they laundered NATO funds to the members of P2, hear the ambulance out there, fire engine, and they staged coups and bombings in Italy and elsewhere. And this article goes into Lord Carrington, Alexander Haig, and Henry Kissinger. And remember, Kissinger was Gray's boss in the government, and Robert Keith Gray sent Wilson to Washington. So next week, I'll do some of that article because it's very, very important, and it ties it all together. And it was published just 2 months before the other meeting, the triumvirate in Rome, and then the ambassador got hurried in there. In the meantime, the clock is ticking away, so we have to close. This is Mae Brussel. It's KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California, and I'll be back with you next week.